Informative, interesting, intelligent. President and CEO with the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber, Amber Smith with News from the Chamber.
Good afternoon. I'm Amber Smith with the Tucson Metro Chamber, and we are here at Stuart Title on Broadway, right here in Tucson, Arizona, on Business, Tucson Business Radio, News from the Chamber. Welcome. Our story today is going to be about Tucson, Arizona, and one of our largest, most dynamic industries happening that is having an impact not only on our local community, but across the entire world. Southern Arizona's clear blue skies and dry climate have attracted aerospace-related businesses since the early 1900s. The aerospace and defense industry is a major component in the region's economy, and Tucson and Southern Arizona enjoy the fifth highest concentration of aerospace and defense employers in the country. The region's aerospace industry presence includes defense and space-related manufacturing, research and development, industrial high-tech fields, assembly, distribution, and warehousing. It also includes firms that maintain and rehabilitate the nation's commercial aircraft fleet. This is backed by the six military installations that call Southern Arizona home, notably Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, Fort Huachuca in Sierra Vista, the Air National Guard, and the top two. And these are the top two in terms of economic output in Arizona. In total, aerospace and defense has an economic impact of $8 billion right here in Southern Arizona. I'd like to welcome our guests today to help talk about this industry, the impact that we are having, and what the future looks like. First, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Mr. Michael Guyman, the Vice President of the Tucson Metro Chamber, who heads our Workforce Development and Local Community and Government Affairs. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Amber.
I'd like to also welcome joining us Mr. Howard Stewart, who's the President and CEO of AGM Container Controls. AGM is a Tucson manufacturing company with 115 employees, and AGM manufactures environmental control hardware for missiles and other sensitive equipment. AGM also manufactures the world's premier vertical wheelchair lift, which provides access to elevation changes in public facilities and residences for individuals with disabilities. Good afternoon, Howard.
Good afternoon, Amber.
And rounding up this afternoon's lineup, we have Mr. Stephen Fleming. Stephen is the Vice President of Strategic Business Initiatives for the University of Arizona. Go Wildcats!
Sure do.
He is a highly successful senior executive with leadership experience in startups, multinationals, private equity, and university-based economic development. Recognized as thought leader for innovation and entrepreneurship, including selection as one of the first principal investigators for the NSF iCorps program. Most recently, Stephen led economic development and entrepreneurship initiatives at Georgia Institute of Technology.
Amber.
Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, Amber. Thanks for having me on the show.
So our roundup here is really talking about the whole cross-section of economic development as related to this industry. We have Stephen representing the startups and the research that helps catapult the industry. While Howard takes that research, develops goods and materials to support it, and represents one of our successful aerospace companies working in manufacturing right here. So, Howard, let's start with you in terms of what your business does in relation to the aerospace and defense industry.
AGM Container Controls started off by getting into the military container business. So we basically make control devices for containers that hold things like missiles, engines, and delicate equipment. And these are parts such as breather valves, desiccators, and humidity indicators, and record holders. Those are the four major products. Because of our desiccators that we made for these missile containers, this ultimately led us into an opportunity to get involved with making desiccators that go directly into the missiles. And in that regard, our products protect the optic systems and the seeker guidance systems. More specifically, if you're watching, say, one of the networks such as CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and you were watching maybe a missile heading towards a target, you would not be able to see the missile itself, as well as you would not be able to see that target without our product, our desiccator, inside the optics camera system, wicking away the moisture from the lens, because otherwise it would just fog over, much like an iced tea glass. Another product that we make that's really important for this industry is our tie-down straps, our military-grade tie-down straps, which are also used for industrial purposes, as well as a product called tie-down shelving. So tie-down shelving basically helps protect ships or military bunkers from incoming missiles, or in the case of ships, torpedoes, or if a ship maybe strikes a mine. So just to give you an idea of what happens in those situations, missiles and torpedoes, when they're coming in, they can come in with a force strike of a 10 to 20,000 pound hammer strike, the equivalent thereof. So it's a tremendous amount of force. And when that happens, and they hit the ship, a lot of people can be killed. Interestingly, people aren't necessarily killed by the missile or torpedo itself. What happens is that I'm going to give you a good example. Do you remember the USS Cole, Amber? Mm-hmm. It was struck in, I think it was Yemen, back in the year 2000 or 1998. I can't remember. Anyhow, they lost 17 sailors. But in that particular case, only two of the 17 sailors were killed by the missile, shrapnel from the missile itself. It wasn't a missile, excuse me, the shrapnel from the blast itself. The other 15 individuals were killed from the force thereof as it knocked things about in the room. So our products are basically holding up computers, other electronic gear in place, desk, bookshelves, all sorts of things, file cabinets, so those things don't ultimately kill the sailors. We're also involved in protecting missile silos from hydrazine gases that can escape. So this is like a rocket propellant. So those are some examples of things that we're involved in the defense industry.
So, Stephen, can you talk about the university's role in trying to support companies like Howard's as well as the innovation piece of it?
Sure, thanks. The University of Arizona is a spectacular place to work. It's one of the top-ranked research universities in the country. And I love to talk about our research, and I love to talk about the scientists and other staff we have doing really creative, innovative things. But you have to keep in mind, when I talk to Howard or I talk to any other business executive, the first three things they want to talk about is workforce, workforce, workforce. And about item number four, they can talk about, oh, let's do some research, let's do something creative. But fundamentally, what they're looking for is our students. Luckily, we turn out awesome students, both of the undergraduate and the graduate levels. And what we find in the defense industries, whether it's the suppliers like AGM or the enormous companies like Raytheon here in town, yes, they have a well-known appetite for engineering graduates, and they will hire every engineer that we can turn out, and we luckily have a very good and very competent engineering school. But they also need everything else. You know, they need lawyers. You know, they need financial executives. They need supply chain people. In a lot of cases, they need workforce that doesn't need a four-year degree. And so we have very good partnerships with Pima Community College for students coming out, for example, of their mechatronics program, which is a two-year program that can also solve a lot of problems on a production line. So when we talk to companies, when we talk about economic development, there's many, many things the university does. I'll be happy to talk about those later in the program. But when we talk to businesses, the first thing they want to talk about is, so tell me about the kids you're educating. What can they do and when can I hire them?
Howard, how does your company respond to workforce development issues?
Well, for one thing, I want to echo what Stephen just said about the quality of the students coming out of the university. In particular, we've hired quite a few of their engineering students over the years. In fact, every current engineer at AGM was educated at the University of Arizona. But in addition, I'd just like to say that those students have also had the quality that we've been able to promote them into other parts of our company. So, for example, right now I have a CFO who's a U of A engineering grad who also has the ability to oversee both my HR department and my IT department. I have a manufacturing design engineer who's a U of A grad, and I've got my sales manager, for example, is a U of A grad. So it's an excellent school, and they've also supplied other key managers throughout the company. And so I think the U of A's got a lot on the ball there. We've also been involved other ways. We're involved with Pima. In fact, let me go back just a moment. So about each year, right now in 2008, we're on pace to have somewhere between 23 and 25% of our employees attend college. So part of the workforce development isn't just taking these people that the university or Pima's already graduated, but for us, it's actually to continue the education of our current employees. So Pima is very helpful in that regard. In particular, we work closely with their machine tool technology program. And we are also, I've actually, at my initiation, Pima is working on a new quality assurance program. So I came to them with an idea roughly a year and a half or two ago and basically said, hey, you guys need more than, all these machine shop employees that you're, educating and graduating, that's great. But all the companies are taking those individuals probably also need quality assurance people, inspectors, and especially those who can operate CMMs, and which are similar to operate as, say, a CNC, a computer numerically controlled machine. So anyhow, Pima's helping us with that. They've just been terrific. And another way we've been involved was two years ago when they had a STEM exhibition, we stepped forward to be their sort of like premier sponsor of the event. We got about 1,000 students and their families to come to Pima to learn more about all the STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, math fields that Pima is doing coursework in.
Howard, let's dive a little bit more into the workforce development, and we'll certainly continue this dialogue, obviously, with you, Stephen, with the work that you do at the university. You talked about the program where you work with your employees, you assist them to further their skills, whether it's at Pima Community College or the U of A with your tuition reimbursement program, which I imagine would be also a great tool to retain many of the employees. But I've also heard that you don't mind them using that tuition reimbursement to maybe find, get skills in even other careers. So how do you see that not only be a retention tool, but really as a tool that other companies, other companies certainly have tuition reimbursement programs. I think you have a much higher percentage compared to other companies. So how do you use that as a recruitment tool, and how do you see that as sort of a benefit for the entire community?
So in response to what you're saying in terms of other companies having a college education reimbursement program, they do. But from what I understand, most such problems have very low participation. And I can understand that because, when I rejoined our company some 30 years ago, we would have typically somewhere between no one in the program to maybe one or two. But this year, I think we have 29 in the program, and 29 out of the 115 employees. And basically, how we've gotten there is there's been multiple ways that we've built that success. For one, I'm very supportive of the program. I really feel that college is a wonderful thing that everyone should have the opportunity to experience. And so my ideal would be that every single one of my employees, if every one of my employees wanted to do it 100%, I would pay for it in an instance. There's an IRS program. I forget the name of the does anybody remember the name of the IRS? No, anyhow, there's an IRS program that basically allows you to spend up to reimburse employees up to $5,250 per year. And it's a great program. How we incorporate it is a lot of businesses will reimburse 100% maybe for A's and then B's and C's at some lesser percentage. At AGM, we reimburse both A's and B's at 100% and C's at 75% instead of what before we only did at 50%. So I think you want to have high reimbursements because a lot of people who are already in the workforce, maybe they don't feel that great about what their high school experience or something like that in terms of they didn't feel like they had a successful high school experience, so they think they're not going to have a successful college experience. But part of the real difference there, I think, is maturity level. Most of these people have matured quite a bit since high school, and so they're able to deal with that sort of they're able to handle college in a way that they wouldn't have been able to handle high school. We also do a lot of sort of awarding employees. Like we have six different awards that we give out to employees who've been very involved in college. And that one is focused on employees who've it rewards employees who've both done well in school and who are taking challenging classwork that actually has some sort of connection to AGM. But you mentioned one other thing. So another thing that happens at AGM is that I'm not the only one pushing this. My HR manager is also pushing it. And so the two of us together, without her help, I was never able to get that percentage over 20%. And last 2 years, we've actually exceeded 20%. And then separately, you said something you brought up the fact that we let employees study things besides what, you know, has a connection to our business. Yes, I'm very proud of the fact that we're not only doing things that are connected to, say, like the military defense industry or engineering or, you know, STEM type degrees, but I'm actually helping, over the years, I've helped people work towards nursing degrees, sociology, become teachers, and pursue other, you know, pursuits. And the reason I do this is I've come to the conclusion that our community is really in desperate need of all sorts of different types of individuals. And in life, we only get around, you know, a chance to go around once in life. And I want to encourage people to be what they want to be. And to you know, if I can support them by giving them, you know, a few thousand a year towards those pursuits, I'm totally good with it. And what happens, by the way, is that when people pursue those things, they oftentimes are learning skill sets that are helpful to my company. So, for example, let's say somebody's pursuing nursing. Well, they're going to have to take more English classes, get better at writings, get better at giving presentations. They're going to have to improve their keyboarding skills. They're going to end up taking math classes and become quicker at math. Just more, frankly, logical, great critical thinkers. That's what education is really doing out there. And so I think one of the reasons that our company's been quite successful is because we've got so many smart employees.
Well, and Howard, I really appreciate your company's approach to addressing workforce development. And I know that you were a participant in our recent pilot program, the Veterans Workforce Development Initiative, in which we were placing veterans specifically in the aerospace and defense industry. You know, I would say from our perspective, I think as a community, we are really actively addressing workforce development, not only in trying to build programs locally, such that you referenced with Pima Community College and that partnership addressing businesses' needs, but looking into the long term as to what that looks like. So, Stephen, we've talked about the workforce development piece, and we know that we are working on that and that there is a high demand of that. What about what are we doing well in our community in support of aerospace and defense outside of that workforce development piece?
Well, As you mentioned, aerospace, that word didn't exist 100 years ago, but aerospace has been a big part of the Southern Arizona economy for over 100 years. And it comes from a lot of different directions. I mean, if you look at the space part of aerospace, that actually dates back to the Apollo program, when all the initial mapping of the moon for the Apollo astronauts was done right here on campus at the University of Arizona. We have the best college of optical sciences, arguably, in the world. We're either ranked number one or number two, depending on who you talk to. I like number one. that came out of aerospace work being done for classified missions back again in the 60s and 70s. So we've had 50 years of experience in delivering these very complex, very high-value, very high-profile missions for both civilian and military space. Up to, for example, I think a lot of people know that right now, University of Arizona is managing a billion-dollar NASA mission to go orbit an asteroid, sample a piece of it, and bring it back to Earth. Actually, bring it back to Tucson. That actually is going to rendezvous very soon, first week of December. And so the fact that someone like NASA trusts the University of Arizona to manage a billion-dollar program is because – it's not just because we're nice people. It's because we've got 50 years of experience proving we can do those things. So when the aerospace community looks at Tucson or looks more broadly at Southern Arizona, they see that history and they say, wow, that's a place to which I need to pay attention. So we just finished up a study with Deloitte Consulting on the Southern Arizona space ecosystem. And it gave us some very high marks. We have everything from companies like Raytheon, which their missiles are not necessarily spacecraft, but the technologies are very, very similar, to established companies like Paragon Space Development Corporation, which is 25 years old, Rincon Research, which is, I think, almost 30 years old here in Tucson, to brand new companies like Vector, which is getting ready to launch its first orbital rocket, Worldview, which is, I think, up to mission 60 on their stratospheric balloons, which it turns out you can do a lot of things from the stratosphere that we thought you needed satellites for. There's a really vibrant, really active space market happening here in Southern Arizona. And as you look around the country, there's only three or four cities that can say that, and they tend to either have, long NASA histories, like the area around Kennedy Space Center in Florida, or they have a lot of billionaires, like Seattle. And then there's Tucson. And Tucson is really getting there through brain power and hard work, which has turned out to be a really interesting positioning as I go around the country talking to people about aerospace in general and space particularly. And yes, companies are looking at expanding here, growing here, relocating here. Startups are thinking about founding themselves here because of that, 50 years plus of experience in delivering complex space missions.
Well, and as a quick follow-up to that, Stephen, you mentioned companies looking at Tucson. Vector Launch recently decided to locate here. Worldview, which was born out of Paragon, the two founders of Paragon, founded Worldview, balloon technologies, developing stratellites that go into near space, which has a lot of interesting weather and other commercial technology aspects to it. Free fall, which I believe is a technology that
UA spin out.
UA spin out, exactly. And so we're seeing both in the attraction side, and you have a lot of experience in economic development, running economic development organizations in the Atlanta area, but also from that university perspective of having the ability to spin out some of those companies, really commercialize those companies. You talk about this Deloitte commissioning this study or unveiling the study related to the space industry. We're talking a lot about sort of what you would consider the conventional aerospace and defense, right? We have Raytheon with its 11,000 employees that makes a lot of missiles, and Howard provides the moisture control systems for those missiles. We have companies here that are basically MRO operations where they maintain and repair commercial spacecraft or commercial aerospace. So do we want to sort of, as a community, move towards space? Is there a place where we can have both within our area?
They reinforce each other. So you absolutely want to do both. I mean, take the stuff that happens up at Pinal Park in Marana. You know, we have researchers at University of Arizona that are analyzing, there's a phrase out there called big data, analyzing these enormous data sets which represent the diagnostics and the telemetry from, for example, jet engines. And using that and applying machine learning to those data sets, we can start figuring out, you know, when particular engines might need preventive maintenance rather than waiting for that engine to die, hopefully not in flight. So, you know, that's a maintenance and repair operation, but it's being based on some very cutting edge computer science technology. It's a lot more complicated than going to the engine of your car and putting in the dipstick. This is analyzing literally terabytes of data and trying to figure out what happens next. So that's the sort of thing where, again, having the brain power of a tier one research university can be applied to any number of applications. We've got companies here in town doing avionics. We've got companies here in town doing logistics. We've got companies here in town doing many pieces of the both space and the traditional aero part of aerospace, you know, airplanes and missiles. And you know, whatever problems they're looking at that are could be technology based, they could be supply chain, they could be logistics. There's probably somebody at the university working on something that can help them.
So, Stephen, you're from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You were doing economic development there, right, and also working on industry clusters.
Right.
How does that experience working in that community compare to us? Are there lessons learned that we could gain?
It's nice to have Hartsfield as your local airport. That is one thing,
right,
which is painfully different about operating out of Tucson than out of Atlanta, is just the number of direct or nonstop flight connections. That's just true. It takes a one-day trip and makes it a two-day trip. It takes a two-day trip and makes it a three-day trip. That's unfortunate, but you know, we need to keep working on that. Other than that, I think a lot of the lessons are similar. The scale is different. I mean, there's more people in Atlanta than there are in Arizona. So it's a very big city. It's one of the fastest growing technology cities in the country. The last time I checked, there was well over 250,000 college students in Atlanta. So it's an enormous collegiate destination. And so, of course, one of my main goals in Atlanta was to make sure that those college graduates found jobs in Georgia. Same thing here. I mean, the scale is smaller, but one of my main goals here is to make sure that all of our University of Arizona graduates and also the ASU graduates and the NAU graduates and the Embry-Riddle graduates up in Prescott, we want them to be able to find great jobs that are fulfilling, that let them build great careers, let them support, you know, families, and of course pay their taxes here in Arizona. And we have not been doing as much of that as we probably need to be. Part of the reason is we're sitting next door to California, and there's this great sucking sound of, you know, pulling our graduates into California because they offer these astronomically high salaries.
No pun intended.
They also have astronomically high living expenses. So, you know, what I try to tell students is, you know, do the math, and net-net, you could actually do better with a lower salary, but taking more home and putting more in your pocket or putting more into your mortgage here in Tucson than you could in, for example, the Bay Area. So that's a lesson learned from Atlanta. The other thing which Atlanta has taught me, which I think my experience is I've been in Tucson about 2 years. My experience here has been good. The stories I've heard about old Tucson have not been so good, is really seeing that the public sector and the private sector need to cooperate, that it's not the city or the county or the state or a big company or small companies or an incubator. It's all these entities working together with a common vision and a common mission. Atlanta has been doing that for 150 years. They're very, very good at that. That's how they got the Olympics. That's how they have won a number of major, major economic economic development wins from corporate relocations and so forth. My direct experience the last couple of years, I think Tucson's doing reasonably well at that. I do hear some folks saying, oh, you should have been here in the old days when we all hated each other. Well, I'm glad I wasn't here in the old days. The new days seem to be working pretty well. But again, emphasizing that there's not one player with all the resources, there's not one player with all the answers. Public and private partnerships are the way to go forward on so many of these things.
Stephen, I'm so glad you brought up that point. Good afternoon. This is Amber Smith here from the Tucson Metro Chamber on Tucson Business Radio at Stewart Title on Broadway in Tucson. We're here with Stephen Fleming, the Vice President of Strategic Business Initiatives for the University of Arizona, and then Mr. Howard Stewart, the President and CEO of AGM Container Controls. Alongside me is Michael Guyman, the Vice President of the Tucson Metro Chamber. You know, Stephen, that public-private partnership piece is what I find to be our community's biggest asset these days. Yep. We're seeing so much growth and development and activity in our downtown area, as well as the different companies that have chosen to locate here as well as to start here. So talk to us about some of that. Let's take a little bit those good stories of the outgrowth of companies in this area that came from the U of A.
You know, one of the ones that that we like to point to, it's not legally a spin out of the University of Arizona because it's not based on University of Arizona technology, but we do love talking about Worldview because Worldview is an exciting company. It's essentially unique. They've established a scientific and technical underpinning of their business. Where there's nobody else even close to what they're trying to do. They've hired a lot of our graduates. We the university, have a lot of experience with stratospheric balloons, launching them out of Antarctica, of all places. Here they're going to launch them out, or have been launching them out of Tucson, which is better. And, you know, what they now have is the ability to go to companies, to go to multinationals, to go to governments, to go to militaries and offer a set of services, whether it's for scientific research, say, you know, weather observation, hydrology, you know, where's the Colorado River going to wind up, all the way to, you know, looking at the Moluccan Straits near Indonesia and figuring out, you know, where's the pirate ships. Those are all amazingly attractive applications of technologies, a lot of which can be based on things we do at U of A. For example, we make the best cameras in the world. So, you know, if you want to put great cameras on your stratospheric balloon that's going to be up there for 6 months, you want to make sure you're not just, you know, going down to Best Buy and buying a Canon camera off the shelf. You want to buy something that's pretty special. Well, we can build those at the university. If you're looking at scientific experiments, you're trying to get above the atmosphere to look at microwave radiation from the Big Bang or something, you know, cosmologically significant, looking at black holes. Again, you know, we have experience building those instruments and we can fly those on Worldview. So even though they're not a spin out, even though there's no legal relationship, there's a lot of back and forth between Worldview, which is, I think, up to 100 and some odd employees now. It's a significant employer, and the U of A, and I just hope those sorts of cooperations continue.
Here we are talking about public-private partnerships, but I would say that the spirit of collaboration in general is alive in Tucson. Mm-hmm. So, Howard, I want to talk to you about your role with Southern Arizona Manufacturing Partners. So that's an opportunity where you're working with probably some of your competitors, and yet you've all aligned. So tell us about that experience and how that ultimately is benefiting your company and the community in general.
AGM has been in business for roughly the last 50 years, and approximately 10 years ago, I finally sort of encouraged our company to move in a new direction, which was to develop a machine shop that at minimum met our own needs. We, previous to that experience, we a lot of times were working with machine shops who did not always have our interest in mind when it came to meeting our on-time deliveries or level of quality. So we headed off in that direction and along the way, frankly, we began to realize, like, well, we need machinists who are adequately educated to go into this industry. And I don't remember how the first connection happened between me and the Southern Arizona Manufacturing Partners, but at some point it evolved. So SAMP, the Southern Arizona Manufacturing Partners, are basically they've worked with Pima One Stop Program and Pima College, and I don't know, there's one or two other organizations involved, but they've set up a program whereby young people of high school age who are attending either Desert View High School, which I think is in Sunnyside District,
correct,
or Tucson High School, which is, of course, in Tucson Unified School District, they have the opportunity to get involved in machining and get both, like, dual credit for it, both high school and college. And so there are machine shops in both of these high schools, and the students work along. And then when they basically graduate from high school, there's a system set up whereby manufacturers in the SAMP manufacturers, and I think there's like 18 of us partners, we basically offer these young people an opportunity to come to work for us. Actually, their first 2 months is paid by Tucson something or other. I apologize. I don't remember. I have that name at the tip of my tongue. But they work for about 300 hours and get paid by them. And then all manufacturing partners thereafter have a chance to pick those students up for their own. And typically, I think there's about, you know, each year they're graduating, like from high school, they're graduating roughly, say, 25 or 30 machinists. And then after that two-month experience, directly after high school, then we pick them up. And then basically we allow them to work part-time while they go to Pima College and complete either their certificate or their high school degree. And so we've gotten involved from both sitting on a SAMP panel. We've also become part of this Pima College External Advisory Committee. I don't myself sit on either one of these. I send my machine shop manager, who by chance is also a Pima graduate, and that has worked into Pima asking me if Tim O'Moore, AGN's machine shop manager, could actually work as an instructor at Pima College due to his credibility as a great machinist. So that's kind of how that whole program has evolved. We've taken this year we took two. Last year we took four. I think we took more graduates than anybody else that year. And we're very supportive of the program. I think another thing that I'd like to maybe mention here is that a lot of these young people, they come from tough socioeconomic circumstances. So there are oftentimes when they go to work for manufacturing companies or machine shops like mine, they might actually be the big breadwinner in their family. And so they're not just earning money for themselves, but they're earning money for their whole family. So it feels really good to be involved in this, because I really believe in equality of opportunity for everyone in our society. And I think it's great that they've got a chance to get sort of a leg up by going this route. And by the way, you know, machine shop careers can pay quite well. There's
absolutely
machinists in this town who are making $25, $30, $35 an hour. So it's a great way to provide for one's family. And the other thing is that a lot of these machinists ultimately, that's how they got moved forward with their education through, say, like an associate degree. Thereafter, they get interested in becoming engineers. In fact, some of the best engineers that the U of A graduates are those who have some prior, say, machine shop experience. Yep.
This to me is just a fascinating issue, because we talk a lot about partnerships. Stephen, you talk about the 150 years that Atlanta succeeded in manufacturing these partnerships throughout the years. This was the SAMP model is certainly a recent case where, as Howard points out, there was a lack of machinists. I remember Sargent Aerospace meeting with them probably about 5-6 years ago, and they actually have a 70,000 square foot facility down in Guaymas, in Sonora. And the main reason they have that 70,000 square feet down there is because as they need machinists to manufacture the piston rings that they ultimately sell commercially, they you know, couldn't swing a stick in Guaymas without hitting a machinist. Mm-hmm. Whereas here in Tucson, as Howard pointed out, we have had a difficulty backfilling a lot of the machinists, the very skilled machinists who are ultimately and very shortly retiring. So the SAMP model was created to address that issue. But this is a question really for both of you. That was identified as a skill that was missing, sort of one of the skills gaps that we have here in the region. What are some of the other skills gaps that, Stephen, whether you're talking to companies or even Howard in your company, you're seeing that we really need to address? Maybe that's SAMP's next thing to tackle.
Well, there's a couple layers to that question. There are a layer of skills that something like SAMP could tackle for electricians, skilled equipment operators, what's frequently called the middle skills. And yes, all of the companies, especially the aerospace companies here in Southern Arizona, are going to need all of those. But there's another layer to it, and I think this is where a lot of the University of Arizona's focus is, where a lot of President Robbins' his focus is, and where you're going to see changes in our curriculum, which is the fact that no matter what skill you're leaving school with, things are moving so rapidly, you're going to be obsolete in 5 to 10 years. So you can't just go get, you know, something stamped on your forehead that you're a machinist or you have whatever skill that you need and just go do that for 40 years and then retire. That doesn't exist anymore. And so exactly like what you've been saying about, you know, paying for tuition reimbursement, the idea that everyone at all levels from, factory floor to the C-suite is going to be going back to school a lot over their entire career. To learn new things. And so first, we need to be turning out graduates that are capable of that sort of lifelong learning. And then secondly, we, the university, need to make sure we're providing opportunities for that lifelong learning. That may be something as formal as coming back for a master's degree. That may be something as informal as a bunch of YouTube videos. It may be something in between, some sort of certification programs where we can give you a micro certification in a particular skill that you do that mostly online. Maybe you come to campus a few weekends, something like that. But there's going to be an entire array of lifelong learning requirements for the workforce. And that's very different for a university that the undergraduate experience has all kind of been, you walk in the door and 4 years later you put on the mortarboard and you graduate and then you're done. That's not the freshman that walked in our door 3 months ago, that's not the career path they're going to be following. And so we have to make sure they're able to keep coming back, whether virtually or physically, and keep developing new skills.
I'd like to chime in on this one. I totally agree with you, Stephen. At AGM, we have people like who've come to us with just a high school education who thereafter are working on the certificates at Pima College. We have ones who've started, with certificates, who are working towards their associates, people with associates working toward their bachelors, people working from the start with their bachelors working towards their masters. But we also do a lot of, other website learning or sending people to courses either here in Tucson when possible, or if not, then across the nation to wherever those courses are being taught, where they're taking like these 1-day, 3-day, 5-day classes. In fact, about roughly 40% of AGM's employees participate in such sort of extracurricular classwork in 2018. The other thing I'd like to say is it's just amazing to me sometimes how much things have changed. Like when I first came to back to AGM in the late 89, but mostly in the 90s. But, all the marketing was rather straightforward. It was just, we were doing a lot of print ads, and that was it. And the internet, man, it just turned that whole thing on spinning on its head. A great example is, you know, our marketing manager, while she's wonderful, she needs now a staff of five to basically get all the marketing work done. And a great example is, you know, we have one employee now who's working in the marketing department on her master's and also taking other classes. And she has to look at, like, Google's making 500 algorithmic changes per year. And we've got to stay on top of that if we want to make sure that we continue to get high rankings. So there's just no relaxing. And so now there's also a very strong relationship between our, and has been for some time, between our marketing department and our IT department. You can't have a marketing department any longer that's just, you know, does not understand anything about the world of IT.
I think that we are really hitting on a lot of challenges that businesses in general are having. Workforce development, keeping up with changing technology, and everything seems to be racing at such a fast speed, it's difficult to ever catch up. On the workforce development piece, we're talking about we need more STEM schooling for young kids so that we are prepared in the future. And yet we also know that we have to be developing 2-3 generations ahead at the same time today while we still try to grow our young population to backfill some of these roles. Stephen, how much is the U of A integrating with, you know, trying to build that next generation, that STEM training from those elementary kids on the way up?
There's a lot of activity on that. If you listen to our president, you'll very quickly hear him talk about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Fourth Industrial Revolution is combining really three different worlds, changes in physical materials, changes in computing, and changes in biology, and seeing that the sum of all those is far more impactful than any of them separately. And so one of the things that you're seeing is that, we as a university, like any university, tend to be organized in particular silos. You know, you're a mechanical engineer or you're a physicist or you're in, the journalism school. Maybe some of the students coming through now have to be able to do things in all of those. I picked those three at random. But the interdisciplinarity, which we've been doing in research for a long time, is now making its way into actually undergraduate education. Which is great for the students. It adds a whole layer of complexity for the professors, which we're still getting our hands around. The other aspect of it that I don't want to lose track of, you actually mentioned K through 12. We are the land-grant university in the state of Arizona. We are partially publicly funded. I wish a little more publicly funded, but that's a different podcast. we have an obligation to the taxpayers of Arizona. And, you know, one of those obligations is making sure that the students who are coming in as freshmen are ready for college. And in a lot of ways, that's been a real challenge, here in Tucson and across the state. So, again, back to public-private partnerships, we have been working a program for, I believe it's been 2 years. This is now the third year with Microsoft. Obviously enormous Fortune 50, whatever company they are, maybe Fortune 5, I don't know, where Microsoft is helping us to train and prepare our computer science undergraduates to go off into the middle schools in Tucson and teach computer science to 7th, 8th, 9th graders because they're going to learn it better from somebody who's 20 years old than somebody who's my age, because they don't want to listen to an old guy like me. And that's been incredibly successful because this is now developing skills and capabilities in middle school, high school, that if that strikes a spark with a particular young person, they can see that as a career they can move toward. And okay, maybe I'll take that extra math course in high school, or maybe I'll take the harder version of physics in high school, because I want to go to the U of A, and that's going to be the requirement I have to get into the U of A, because I know that at the end of my time at U of A, I can do this great thing that I want to do with my career. If they hadn't had that spark in 7th or 8th grade, maybe they get on a less academic track, maybe they fall behind, and then they find out senior year is like, honestly, great kid, but you know, your chances of getting into the U of A are slim because you just don't have the background. So helping, you know, communicate that to students and to the K through 12 teachers in the middle school, high school years is helping us serve the state better by making sure the students that come in the door are actually ready to study, ready to perform.
And that's also where the partnership with Pima Community College is so beneficial through the 2+2 program.
The 2+2, if and I've told, and this is heresy working at the four-year university, but I've told people that if they're coming up with a young student, you know, high school student, and they're not quite sure what they want to do, and they're not quite sure, you know, what direction they want to go in for their career because they're 17 years old, and 17-year-olds don't know anything, is put them in Pima. You know, you'll save a lot of money. You'll be able in the 2+2 program to take courses that are going to transfer later on. They can explore different things because the cost of exploring there is so much lower than it is because I think we're a great bargain, but we're still a lot more expensive than Pima Community College. And then if they decide, you know, hey, I really want to be in journalism or I really want to be in physics, you know, whatever it turns out to be, transfer, really bear down, sorry, I have to say that, bear down in your junior and senior years and do a great job on campus. It's a very, very attractive mechanism, especially for those of limited means that just can't go, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into debt for the full four-year experience.
So final question, and I'm going to ask it to both of you. Okay. How should the aerospace and defense industry define success, especially right here in Tucson?
I used, as an economic developer, I used to steal a line from my counterpart in Arkansas, and he used to say that, you know, whenever he went to go see the governor, he could only take in two numbers, and one of them was job creation, and the other one didn't matter. So I think at the end of the day, it's job, and I should say it's job creation and job retention, but it's really jobs. I mean, I would love to see spaceports. I would love to see hyperloops. I would love to see all sorts of great and wonderful things happening in the local aerospace community. But if those things are successful, they will create jobs. If those things are not successful, we won't have the jobs. So jobs are a pretty good metric.
Howard.
I would agree with the jobs metric, most definitely, but I think it also has to do with the money that the A&D industry is pulling in. I don't think that everyone understands that, you know, sometimes you've heard a job is a job is a job. Well, it's not. These A&D jobs are paying a much higher amount of money, and they're pulling that money from out of state or even out of the country. And as such, the A&D industry is really, really important because it's both a combination of high pay and pulling money from elsewhere in the country to get, you know, into our economy. And so, yeah, just the more successful we are with these projects economically and the more we were able to build these businesses and bring more businesses like this to Tucson. I want to see as many, you know, I'd like to bring lots of different companies to Tucson, but if I had to pick between an aerospace and defense, you know, contractor versus, I don't know, say a call center, I would definitely pick the A&D contractor because of how much it will do for economy. And then, frankly, I think other numbers maybe that you should pay attention to is how are these jobs helping employ people who were not getting employed before. And we just have to be doing more to make Tucson a more attractive place for these A&D companies to come by better educating our young people, better educating our workforce. Right now, for example, in Arizona as a whole, my understanding is I think we have, you know, 43% have college degrees of some sort. You know, we need to push that up. We need to push that up to 45, 50, 55, ideally up to 60%. And that will attract a lot more A&D contractors to our city.
I want to really add on to that, you know, to be a little self-serving, we are the Tucson Metro Chamber, and we are certainly watching, you know, our gross domestic product rate. I mean, because the aerospace and defense industry, to your point, is producing a product being purchased by those out of the state and the country. And that right there can be one of the swiftest ways to be able to grow ourselves out of poverty. Because even though we have an amazing community with so many fantastic assets, from affordability to the University of Arizona and the partnerships in Pima Community College, and we do have a lot of jobs and a diverse range of jobs in our community, we do have this challenge still at the poverty level. So we are grateful to partner with both the U of A and the private sector to grow our workforce. We are developing those tools and having some great success at doing that, and then working with our other partners in the community. Michael, final comments?
Well, it's interesting, Amber, because, you know, as much work that you and I do in the community, whenever we have these conversations, we always learn something new. The programs that the university is doing, having their students go into the classroom to teach some of those skills, I think is fantastic. It's certainly something that that will not only help teach these students, particularly the K through 12 students, on these valuable skills, but it also teaches the teacher.
Yeah, the undergraduates get a lot out of it as well.
They absolutely definitely get a lot out of it. But, you know, one of the things I think moving forward that I've really heard about, and it was interesting, I actually attended a teen town hall that the Metropolitan Education Commission put on this past Friday. And at the table that I was at, it was related to careers. And a lot of the teens talked about how they certainly see a lot of opportunities out there, but they don't fully understand the full breadth of opportunities that really exist within our community. And so whether it's Howard doing the work that he does to develop more skills within his own company, or other companies in a lot of diverse industries getting out to the high schools to say, you know what, kind of to your point, Stephen, there are a lot of great opportunities out there that pay very well. You just may not fully understand what those opportunities are. And so a lot of the work that I think we will continue to do, obviously, on the workforce development piece, doing more of these veteran workforce initiatives, using technology to better match job seekers with the employment opportunities out there, but also really just getting the involvement from the companies here in this region to get down to the K-12 level and say, you know what, you hear a lot about becoming a doctor, a lawyer, but there are a lot of great opportunities that exist within our community. They're well-paying opportunities, and I think ultimately that will help our community become much more diverse.
Agreed.
Thank you all so very much for being here. Again, this is Amber Smith, straight out of Tucson, Arizona, for the Tucson Metro Chamber, exploring the $8 billion aerospace and defense industry in Southern Arizona. That number right there is directly from our military installations and doesn't even compare to the overall industry in Arizona. Either one of you have the number on the overall economic impact of aerospace and defense in Arizona?
I know it's 55,000 employees. Multiply that by a decent salary, and then put a multiplier effect on that, because every one of them is going to, you know, buy a house and buy a washing machine and go to a restaurant. So it's many billions of dollars. It's a crucial part of the Arizona economy.
I don't know the answer to that question, but I was talking with our mutual friend Alex Rodriguez, who's formerly head of the Arizona Tech Council, now with Vector Launch, and he recently informed me that there are 1,200 aerospace and defense companies located in Arizona as a whole.
Right.
So it's a big impact. And Raytheon obviously is the biggest splash out of the 1,200, but those other ones really add up too. It's very significant.
There's I run a space business roundtable, and we just had our first meeting up in Tempe, Phoenix area. We've been running here in Tucson for about a year and a half, and the things that are happening with aerospace up in Phoenix, up the road, are amazing. you know, Orbital ATK got purchased by Northrop Grumman. They just got an $800 million contract from the Air Force to build a rocket in Chandler. That's going to be everything from design, build, test, not launch, obviously. That's an enormous economic impact from a company that a lot of people don't think of very often, because nobody buys anything from Northrop Grumman. You know, right. You don't think about Northrop Grumman as a brand, but that's you know, a huge employer having huge impact. There's things like that all over the state.
Well, and that right there really puts the exclamation point on the impact and growth of the aerospace and defense industry right here in Arizona. Thank you very much. Again, this is Amber Smith with Tucson Business Radio, Tucson, Arizona, at Stewart Title on Broadway. We will see you next month.